Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. You've done it all. You've walked the tightrope of success and accomplished so much in your career. Now what? How do you keep redefining your success and expanding your emotional well-being? Join us to hear talk on mindset, motivation, and your growth in handling the challenges you've experienced both in circumstances and with yourself as a leader. Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders with your host, Tracy Crossley.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. And today I have with me another wonderful expert guest, and her name is Holly Lichtenfeld. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Tracy.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for setting up this conversation today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So let me tell you guys a little bit about Holly, and then we'll get started chatting away. So Holly has worked on sustainability, the environment, and climate change issues for 20 plus years. She accelerates purpose-driven organizations and consults on ESG. And ESG is what, to listeners who don't know?
Environmental, social, and governance, sort of a term for all of the things that wrap up in sustainability.
Thank you. And sustainable solutions. She was the chief growth officer at Sustainabase, working with companies like Nestle and Walmart suppliers. She co-founded Cleanwell, a green chemistry company that replaces toxic disinfectants with safe alternatives. Holly led marketing for EL, or is it EI Solutions?
EI.
EI. Thank you. Sometimes the lowercase, you know, it's like, what is that? Anyways, it's a solar energy developer that installed solar PV systems, including the largest in the US at the time at Googleplex. Holly serves as board advisor to NEA Impact Capital and is on the board of the Women's Foundation of Florida. This empowers her passion for supporting female leaders, women's rights, and highlighting the intersection of women and climate. I love that. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to start off with a question that I always love to ask, which is, when you were a little girl, what did you want to be when you grew up?
So I think if you'd asked me as a little girl, I would have said a veterinarian or a nurse, but I had an underlying entrepreneurial streak or interest that I don't think I knew what to call it. My parents owned a business together. I used to love and go and help them. And I would actually say I was almost like a very early social entrepreneur. So for example, I set up this, you know, somewhat elaborate carnival in my backyard, and there were things to throw, bean bags and all different kinds of, my brother helped me build some things, and I, you know, marketed it and ran a carnival, and then I donated the money to like an ASPCA to take care of the animals. So there you see my veterinarian connection. So I think that what I would have verbalized, and I think where I sort of ended up heading, I just, you know, as a kid, you don't really know how to put a word to that, or at least I didn't.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. I mean, as I like to say, I wanted to be a crossing guard because I thought, this is interesting. Like when I was five, right? This looks like a great job. You get to hang out with kids all day. How fun could that be, right?
I love that.
Yeah, it was fun. And then a doctor, because like you said, I don't think kids know how to verbalize exactly what it is that they want. And so obviously there was something in you, though, that wanted to help animals and people.
Yes, that was my early thing. I didn't quite have the environmental idea or the words in me at that age either. So that kind of came a bit later.
Yeah, I was wondering. So obviously, let's fast forward to college. And, you know, a lot of us major in something that we don't end up working in. So what was what was your story about that? Was that the same for you too?
Yeah, so I started out, I was choosing between pre-med and business, and I ended up going in the business direction. I got a marketing and finance degree. And when I graduated school, I got recruited into Morgan Stanley's investment banking training program in Manhattan. So I went there and I actually enjoyed the work, but it didn't have purpose for me personally. And I started to kind of feel around to figure out what that might be. So there's a term now called climate quitting.
Oh.
There's an increase in young people who are leaving jobs because it doesn't align with their environmental or sustainability, what they want to see the companies doing or what they want to work in. And so hearing that and being exposed to that, I realized I was maybe amongst the earliest of the climate quitters because I left. I'd started to study and learn about renewable energy. And I lived in New York, as I said, and there wasn't much going on. So I picked up and moved to San Francisco, left the job in investment banking, and picked up and moved to go seek out opportunities in that.
Wow, that is pretty incredible. I mean, a lot of people obviously love having job security, but to go from what you were doing to something that obviously had nothing to do with what you were doing, that's a pretty big risk.
Yeah, it even though I was young, and I guess now in retrospect, there's a bit of I have your whole life and ahead of you. But yeah, I mean, it was such a good job, and it was during a time when it was a little bit of a downturn in the economy. There weren't that many people getting those jobs, so it was really I was very honored to have gotten it. So it was a big deal. But I had waitressed in college, and I just kind of had faith in myself that even if I couldn't get a job in what I wanted, I would work two jobs. I'd get a day job and a night job, like sort of whatever I had to do. I was committed to figuring that out.
That's awesome. I love that. So, of course, I always want to bring in, any kind of challenges that you had to go through at that time because so many people can relate, to having career challenges or finding themselves at a crossroads. So, what about you, either in your younger years or, as we come forward to later years?
So I guess one of the challenges, kind of an overall one, was I was super early on my interest in this. Now renewable energy is much more affordable, and so there's excitedly there is a thriving sector now. When I got interested in it, I picked up and I moved, and I got there to find there were a handful of jobs maybe in it, and you people at utilities, people with engineering degrees, and here I was with my business degree. So one of the challenges I had was really developing, as a young woman, my networking skills, which I'd started doing before I moved, west. I had done a bunch of research and contacted some people in the space. But I think that was the biggest challenge. I don't think that we're very well, I know we're not very well, mentored. I think we're getting better at that as a, as women mentoring other women to do it, but that was a big challenge for me, was developing my networking muscle.
Right. I think that serves us well in many industries as far as networking. And I think women are usually hesitant to do that, like you said. I think it makes them self-conscious or, like they're trying to, I don't want to say pull something over on someone, but, that whole imposter syndrome, right? Where,
Yes.
yeah. So.
Yeah, I have this. So when I got to San Francisco, I ended up getting another wonderful job, but it was at Levi's. I worked at Levi's for many years, and I volunteered in the, I was on the board of the Northern California Solar Energy Association to keep myself connected to that while I sort of waited to see how it developed and what job opportunities there could be for me. And, after quite a few years at Levi's, I decided that I really wanted to give it a try again. This is a favorite networking story. So I was having lunch with one of my friends. He was the head of customer service at Levi's. And I said, I don't think I've ever told you that this is sort of my dream. You know that I work on, I'm in this nonprofit, but, and I told him what I was interested in. And he said, oh my gosh, Holly, my brother-in-law is starting a solar business. I need to connect you to him. And I end up leaving, and he was my first client in my consulting business. And I end up working with him for 6 years. That's the one that the L solution slash EI solution. So I think that this whole idea of sharing with the world what you're interested in, I really, through my life, have started to believe in the putting it out to the universe. And it may take a while, but you do get connections.
I totally agree with that. I used to say years ago, like when I went through unemployment and I became a coach, but in that time period, I was, you have to be the town crier. You have to share with people what it is. Otherwise, nobody knows. And how can anybody help you?
Absolutely. And defining what you want is that big part. Because once you know what you want and you can communicate it, then the things start falling into place. When you have a hard time articulating it, then your contacts and can't really help you because they don't know what to do to help you.
Well, it's so interesting because for you, it sounds like you knew that you wanted to be working in, in this environment. And I think you're so right when it comes to most people can't clearly define what it is they want. So my question to you with that is, how were you so clear? What made you realize that this was, the thing for you?
Well, the thing that really hooked into me at the beginning is this happened. This is during one of the Persian Gulf Wars that I was going through this. And the idea of energy independence actually is what really hit me. And I was doing a lot of reading of articles and researching. And so it sort of became this thing where I felt it was really important for. To and look at what's going on in Ukraine now, the idea of energy independence and the connection to war and suffering, and how I wanted to be a part of that, and then picking up and moving to California to work on this, then exposed me to nature and the outdoors in a way that I hadn't been in my youth. And so I then developed this love of the outdoors and I got involved in some nonprofits like Rainforest Action Network. And so all of these things started to kind of come together and build on this beginning passion that I started to find. And then it just snowballed, I guess, from there.
So when you started with, doing a consultancy, what did that consist of? Like, what was it you were actually consulting on? How were you helping, like, this energy company?
So I was applying my business expertise. I have had extensive research experience, data experience, all sort of things like that from my previous jobs. So what I did for them is it was a big problem or question about how do we get businesses to adopt this technology? So what my consultancy was I did research to understand the barriers to adoption, which in that case then helped to inform a whole new product that was like a renewable and financial product together, which didn't really exist. The founder was brilliant. I loved working with him. And so he took the information and created a really breakthrough product at the time, which many other companies built on and had a lot of success after those early ideas. I did targeted understanding of which types of companies would have the best chance of being first movers. As we started to get larger organizations, I rebranded the company to celebrate our customers in a way as thought leaders and really visionaries. And that enabled us to leverage names like Google and Dolby and other big customers that we were getting. So it was very much applying my marketing and finance, but at the same time, which is a theme of my career, I also got to learn about the technology and get the access to that because I really love marrying the two, the business with an understanding of the science and the technology.
That's really, I love that. I do. I know nothing. I mean, I probably know as much as most consumers know when it comes to the field. And so that brings the question of, are there a lot of women, leaders in this area?
Back then, very few. And if you chunk off sort of two areas. There's, I would say, and there's more than this, but if we look at sustainability and clean energy or clean tech, there have been many more women going into sustainability. So that has been more of a trend for a while. Clean tech, renewable energy was much more male dominated, and that though is changing. There's a push in the industry to get more women involved. There's a push to get more diversity. Not just women, but racial and all sorts of diversity involved. There are actually recruiters. I know a recruiter who focuses on getting more diversity into the space. And you can definitely see it. There's quite a few female CEOs in this space now. And that is very encouraging. The head of Sunrun is a woman. I know women who have been started to get board positions in this type of space. And then you also see a lot of women in sustainability manager, sustainability officer, and all levels roles as well. So definitely there, but a big opportunity for expansion for women as well.
And do you, I read, just so you know, I read a lot of research about women in the workplace. And so, I read a report the other day, or a study that was done. It was a global study. I think it was 103 different countries were involved in it. And it was talking about female success in the workplace and how women were affected by that, whether it was, women that were looking at them and felt competition and comparison and therefore were cutting them down, or it was men who would undermine them, which I was really surprised. I actually didn't think it was as bad as it is. What has been either your observation, in your own career or in speaking with other women about that?
I would say that I feel like I've not personally experienced that much in it. I mean, there's been some of that where people to take advantage of your work or, don't push you ahead. But I've also had a lot of people in my life who've been my managers or the owners of businesses who are really into supporting women and supporting me. So I feel like I've had a good experience with that, but I also mentor a lot of people and I feel like that can be pervasive. And it is something a lot of people have to sort of navigate their way through.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so. Do you have any, I don't like to really say advice, but really people are always looking for that, like something that maybe you haven't really personally had that, but when you're mentoring these other women, it sounds like you probably have heard stories. So what kind of advice do you usually offer to them?
Well, one piece of advice I offer is to really try to strip out. So here's kind of an overall thing about that is I feel like there are, you mentioned this in your overview, is that there are men and women who both exhibit these behaviors, right? Where mm-hmm. they're undermining people and they're not supporting them. Actually, did just think of a good personal story, which maybe we'll go back to. But but I think a really important thing is, as women, is being careful to not be part of the thing of branding women as doing that more. I think what happens is sometimes it gets put in our heads that women do that, and then it's like a self-fulfilling thing, like we sort of brand other women that way. When that's not the case, I think if you strip out gender, you'd be like, I've had some really supportive people and some really unsupportive people, and they have spanned all sorts of genders. And so that's my feeling about that is we should support each other and just make sure that we're not putting people in buckets in a way that in the end undermines our own well-being. But I did just think of one story, and maybe it's because they're not top of mind. I bet if I thought about it, I would think of more. But I was in a position where I was asked to take a new role, and the person who I was going to be reporting to was not happy that that I was being sort of asked to do, like he didn't get to choose it, that someone above him had said, we want Holly to be in this position. So I went to go talk to him. He offered it to me, but it was an increase, but he offered it to me as a lateral move. With no increase, no title increase. The person who was in it before had a higher title than I had at the time. It would be going from a manager to a director. And so he was basically like, I have to give it to you, but it's going to be for the same money as you're making now and no title change. Now, I felt like I was in a very powerful position because I was being placed there by someone who was very high level. So I said to him, fine, I'll stay where I am. I'm happy in my group. If I'm not going to get any improvement, then, and that to me is someone who's very much trying to undermine and not support you and not see. And so I was like, fine, I'll go back. I have a great part of the organization I work in. And there I had a lot of leverage. So he had to come back and offer me the higher role and the higher money because, and in the end, that's what worked out. And I ended up not reporting to him after a short while. I reported into the president of the brand. And so I got to go like a level up. So I think it's having confidence and standing your ground and knowing that you're good and that you are going to land and that you have to sometimes feel really confident in yourself and communicate that.
I love that. It is such a great example of confidence and knowing that you have the value. And so you're not tied to that result of, oh gosh, well, maybe I should do it because I'm being offered this, even though it's a lateral move. And it sounds like you probably had more responsibilities as a lateral move. And really, a lot of women would say yes to that instead of, you know, they don't want to ruffle feathers. And I mean, there's so many things we tie into that. Yep. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And there's so much that I've been involved in women's foundations and trainings for women. And so frequently I noticed that I'm in that case, I'm really proud of myself and I did the right thing. But there are so many cases where I do the thing that I'm trying to help other women stop doing. We're just lean into that a little bit. The I have to know this inside and out and have done it a million times before I put my hat in the ring, like all of those things that now I'm super aware of that other, that, you know, the research shows we tend to do that. And sometimes I said, oh, I just did that.
I know. It's so funny. There was a statement. What is it? It's you build the plane while you're flying it. And, you know, that's as an entrepreneur, that was really something that I took to heart, but I still didn't really see my own limitations with that, even though people would think, oh my gosh, you're a risk taker. Oh my gosh, you started a business. Oh my gosh. That was a lot of the feedback that I used to get, right? And really it was not realizing that I still kept within a certain limit. I still stayed within a certain box. And I think a lot of women do that because you get to a place where, well, this is kind of safe, right? This is giving me an income. It seems like there's a comfort with me maintaining this position. And so I'm always curious, you know, when it comes to like you're mentoring other women, what do you tell them about that? What do you suggest to them about that?
I'm sorry, about which part of it?
About, you know, telling them, hey, it's okay for you to, you know, either leave your job or to go after the promotion, or let's say you're an entrepreneur and you need money for your business. Like, you know, giving, I don't want to say giving women permission, but what do you say to women who feel like they're kind of stuck, but they're kind of comfortable too?
Yeah, I think obviously it's a individual situation to make sure that they're doing the right risk for their financial, you know, situation. So that's the first part. But yeah, I mean, I've had women who have come to me and said, similar kind of situation, I got offered this job, but this, and this isn't sitting right with me. And so I always say, push back on that, really strip out for a minute that immediacy or that feeling like I have to grab this now. And really think about, is it the right step for you? And if those things are turning little red alerts, then that means that when you get there may be more of that. But if you have a conversation with them and they're able to be flexible or support you or move some of those things, well, then that sends you a different sign about it. So I think the most important thing is not doing any of this from a place of fear, whether it's a fear of, if I don't take this, I'm not going to get the next thing, or a fear of I have to leave my thing immediately. Just really being careful to think through it and make sure that you are going to a place that at least you can do as much assurance as you can that it's the right kind of a place for you.
Yeah, I don't actually believe that there's any, I don't want to say bad moves, because I think we learn things from all of our choices, right? Mm-hmm. And I do agree with you totally about not making fear-based decisions. But I think a lot of women feel like there's a scarcity of opportunity at certain levels. You know, when you read only 21% of CEOs are female in the United States, right there, that's a showstopper for some women. Well, maybe I shouldn't try, or maybe I shouldn't go forward. There's no room for me.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I also think that, you know, as women look at not just the CEO, but thinking of a few colleagues who are trying to stay at that level. You're right. I think your point is well taken. Needing to work with the people who are helping to, whether it's recruiters or whoever is trying to open more doors, the parts of the country or areas where you're seeing more female board members being added is also a good sign of where there may be more opportunity.
I agree. And so, for you, getting back to the meat of your career, working in the field that you do, what would you say are some of the greatest moments that you are finding occurring now and maybe are going to occur in the next couple of years in, energy, climate change, environment?
Well, I think one is what I was saying, that there's a lot of people pushing to get in and interested to switch with the tech layoffs. A lot of people are looking to get in, and I think that's a very positive thing. My vision has been for many years that we will stop having things called sustainable jobs, and it will just be that our economy, our world is sustainable. And so, of course, you work in something that isn't some crappy chemical that you don't want to work helping to sell more of. So I think that's a very positive thing. The Inflation Reduction Act that just came down and all the money that's flowing in is going to create a lot of opportunities that already started to, because companies are setting up different kinds of operations here, manufacturing, all sorts of things that are getting funded, which then will mean, even if it's international businesses, that they will have management opportunities in those new places. So there's money flowing in, there's movement. It's For me, it's slow, but it's starting to be more and more people. And the more people we have working in it, the more that will care. On the other part, that's interesting, probably for a lot of women that are out there in current positions, is all of a sudden you have to understand, have some exposure to ESG. And so, one of the things that I've been doing is getting a lot of calls from women that I've met at conferences or elsewhere. It kind of speaks to that idea of being confident enough as we move in this direction that you are comfortable in what you're talking about. And so I've been coming in and doing brainstorming sessions and things like that with women who are in leadership positions and are starting to have to touch this aspect, just so that they don't become experts, because they don't necessarily have to, but so that they are confident, because that is going to be an important part of being on a board, which a lot of women are trying to push to get more board seats. And being part of the C-suite. So I would say, in the area that I'm in, reach out to people that you know who are in the space who can help to, sort of mentor you or expose you to it, or bring in people who can help your team and you to understand that, because it's going to be, and it is already important.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I know that you also, as a member of it was the Florida Women's Council, yes,
Foundation, yeah.
Foundation. So with that, you're helping women and women's rights. Is that what's correlated there, or is that separate?
So the things that that organization does is we do a variety of things to help women be leaders. So we're training women to run for judgeships and political office. We do leadership programs for professional women. We do STEM leadership programs for girls. And we also do some advocacy work around women's rights, whether it's sex education or period poverty. So there's a lot of work to be done in the state. So we're quite busy, but those are a range of things that we do. We also work on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and those aspects of what's really important for women as well. We do a lot of that, and we've done some sessions on that in the workplace.
I love that. I think that you're doing a lot of good. So thank you for all of your contributions, obviously. I mean, wonderful. So before we go, is there anything that you would like to leave the audience with?
I guess one thing is that wherever you are in your career, if you see something that's interesting to you or you're passionate, you want to fold it in, follow that thing, freshen up what you're doing, keep it interesting, and surround yourself with both men and women. So just another thing I would say is, I think as women, whatever level we're at, we find it easier sometimes to lean into peers and lean into women. And it's really important to have men advocating for you, and men, male mentors. So I, and again, whatever, however high up you are in your career, I still think that that is very important to not lose sight of that.
I agree with you 100%. We are here on this earth together. So, you know, it's coming together rather than finding our differences. So, if anybody wanted to find you, where would they find you?
So the best place is LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. It's my very long name, Holly Lichtenfeld. So I don't think there's another one. So you can just look me up. I would be happy to connect. I'll be having a website coming out soon, but it's not launched yet. And that will also be hollylichtenfeld.com. So also easy to find as long as you got that long name.
Wonderful. Well, Holly, I really enjoyed our conversation today, and I really appreciate you coming on here as a guest.
Thank you so much, Tracy. It was really a great conversation. Thanks.
You're welcome. And everybody listening, thank you for tuning in. And if you have any questions, wherever you happen to find this, whether it's on iTunes or many other platforms or video, please feel free to leave your questions there, or you can also write to info@tracycrossley.com. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today. For more information on Tracy and her programs and to set up a discovery session, email business@tracycrossley.com. That's business@tracycrossley.com, and go to tracycrossley.com to get your free download entitled Stop Your Inner Dictator. Thank you for tuning in to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders.